Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/HRN.
This week on Meat and Three, we're talking organization. Not mise en place or keeping your knives in a row, but labor organizing.
If any restaurant worker is listening to this and is like, yes, I want something different, but I don't know where to start. First step they just need to do is to find one of us and get plugged in.
As independent contractors, they can't directly tell people, you know, when or where to work, but by using sort of gamified nudges to push people, that is sort of how they move the workforce around.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It is Monday, May 17th, 2021. This show will be airing this coming Wednesday, and it is our 289th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding chef who is now working in a corporate position, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to protect and preserve your reputation. Yes, our name is essentially all that we got. It's our brand and how we are perceived in the world. Our reputation influences our relationships and opportunities, both professionally and socially. So let's build good ones and work to maintain them, as reputations are everything. That's my tip today. Now, I'm really thrilled to have my guest joining me. It is Brian Bistrong. He is the corporate executive chef of the Cannell Company's The Park and culinary program director of The Park's hospitality group, Table and Banter. With years of rich and diverse experience working side by side with renowned chefs such as Wolfgang Puck, David Boulay, and Grey Coons, as well as running his own restaurant, Brayburn, in Manhattan's West Village, Brian offers a wealth of knowledge and passion at New Jersey's premier catering and events destination. Without further ado, hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Great to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Of course.
So much to talk about with you, because your career is incredible.
I've been pretty fortunate, for sure.
I have to say. So let's start out with your background. How did you get into the industry? When did you know you wanted to be a chef?
Sure. Well, I grew up in New Jersey. I'm a Jersey boy from Central Jersey. Kind of started with food at a really young age. My first job was actually on a farm down the street, and I used to ride my bike down there at 15 and work in the orchards, planting strawberries, picking peaches, and things like that. And then, you know, I always have fond memories of my grandmother cooking and baking. And then a good friend of mine who lived down the street, his family had a restaurant on the Jersey Shore. So at 16 years old, I spent my summers away from my family, living with my friend and his grandmother, working on the Jersey Shore at their restaurant. and start at washing dishes and then prep cook, then cook. And I just caught the bug really quite early, and then went to cooking school out of high school.
Yeah. So, and you went to the Culinary Institute of America.
So out of high school, I went right into the CIA in Hyde Park. And after I graduated, I did feel very young still to start working. And I knew some of my friends who had went to Johnson & Wales continued on to get their bachelor's degree in hotel management. So I started looking at different schools around the country. And Boston University had a program. And once I visited Boston, I fell in love with the city. You know, being in Hyde Park, you're pretty isolated. And then when you go to Boston, there's so many schools, great music scene. And so I transferred, went to BU, and got my hotel degree in 2.5 years from cooking school.
And then where did you work? What was your first job after that?
So first job was at L'Espinasse in New York City. So when I went to BU, I was also a teaching assistant in the food preparatory classes at the hotel school. And the other teaching assistant that was there when I got there was Rocco DiSpirito. So we became really good friends. He graduated a year before me, and he moved to New York and was on the opening team at L'Espinasse. And so when I graduated, I was talking to him, and he got me a stage at L'Espinasse. It had just opened. It was like a couple months new. And stage there, and then Great Kunz offered me a job the same day, and I took it.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. What years are we talking here, just as a reference point?
That was like 1990.
Yeah, because I never dined at L'Espinasse. I've just only heard amazing things about it.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, especially in the with the opening team. The chefs that were in there, I mean, Floyd Cardoz at the time was in the main kitchen, and then came over. There was Troy Dupuy, who was in there, Todd Humphreys, just an incredible amount of talented chefs who had come from all the different restaurants at the time in New York, the great restaurants. People came from Le Bernardin, people came from Boulay, from the Quilted Giraffe, from Jean Georges when he was at the Lafayette. It was a really super talented team of chefs.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. And your experience then is after that, is that when you went on to work with David Boulay? Or
I worked for Gray for I think for about a year and a half, and then I didn't know what I was going to do. I had wanted to go to another restaurant. I actually took the summer and worked in Fire Island at the Dock, which Phil Suarez owned.
Yeah.
Now it's Jean Georges.
Okay.
Yes, because Phil was one of his backers for some of his restaurants. So mm-hmm. I spent the summer there, the season there, which was amazing. Never had been to Fire Island before, didn't know much about it. You know, no cars. You receive your deliveries every day at the dock when the ferry comes in, and that's it. So we did contemporary American food there in Fair Harbor. I was trying to get into pastry or baking, and I ended up working for Amy's Bread for about 6-7 months, which was an amazing job. And then I really got the bug back to cook again. And that's when I took the job, as saucier at Boulay, at the original Boulay at 165 Duane Street.
Wow. I mean, what was your experience like? And then I know you also took some time to go overseas. And
yes. Yeah. I mean, again, that was at the time that Boulay was like number one in Zagat. It was 4-star New York Times, incredibly busy business lunches, and then, you know, packed dinners with, you know, lots of actors and, you know, just lovers of food. Tribeca back then was pretty magical. It wasn't so built up yet. The little park across the street wasn't redone. Actually, across the street was Harry Wills, one of our dairy purveyors that everyone used. So we could like walk and get things if we needed it. And it was, again, like a high powered, really busy, focused kitchen. You know, Gray and David are quite different, both incredibly talented, but there was definitely some chaos in the kitchen at Boulay. It was very inventful. And so sometimes he would just make dishes out of the blue, and you had to be ready for that. But an incredible palate and an incredible cook. He cooked with us every service, lunch and dinner, with all the cooks. He cooked the fish. Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
I've dined there, but not, I mean, I didn't dine there until maybe it was like, I'm guessing 7 or 8 years ago. I mean, yeah. It was such an amazing experience, but he had been around for a long time, but it's a magical restaurant.
It was incredible. I mean, he built it with his brother. You know, he was known for his vaulted ceilings, and he mm-hmm. built that from scratch with his brother. And there was just a lot of details to everything, to the doors, to, you know, the tablecloths, and to the menus that we would print every day for the tasting menus, and really showed me how to be so passionate about certain ingredients. He used to have the waiters, after they worked lunch and dinner, he'd have a waiter take his truck, drive up to the Cape, pick up fish, and drive back the next day. The farmers from the farmers market, you know, they would come in the morning and make deliveries, and it was just incredible.
So I'm jumping ahead a little bit here.
Yeah.
When did you have the idea, or did you always have the idea that maybe you'd want to have your own restaurant?
I always had thought about it. And then when I worked for Jimmy Bradley at the Harrison, again in Tribeca, uh-huh. That's where I met my business partner, John Paul O'Neill, who worked for Dan Barber and worked for Danny Meyer. He was the general manager of the restaurant. And I thought the Harrison was really another magical restaurant, you know, contemporary American, but not super fancy, really great service, good food, and really liked the whole package of the Harrison. And our idea was to kind of do our own version of that in the West Village, because we thought it was like a really beautiful restaurant, somewhere you could go every day or for a special occasion. It had a private room, so it was a good business model as well, to make money and make a living.
Yeah, and I remember I did dine there at Braeburn, and I had a great experience. And
yeah,
and I was looking back, you got a 1-star review by Frank Bruni in the New York Times. And I mean, what led you to eventually close that?
So we opened Braeburn really at the worst time ever. We opened, you know, in 2008, the week that Lehman Brothers crashed and the world imploded. And it was incredibly scary. You know, we weren't doing the business that we needed to. You know, the 1-star review was, we were a little, it was tough. We thought we were going to get 2, was a little, was a little tough, but we plowed through it and continued to make good food. But it was just, the business was not there, and so we ended up selling it. We sold it to some friends from the Red Cat, one of the sous chefs and assistant managers, and it's still there, which makes me really happy for them. It's called the Left Bank, and you know, we tried and we moved on. That's when I went back to Boulay. But It was a great experience. Well, tough, but great.
And I only have, I mean, I think I give you a lot of credit. I think it was a wonderful restaurant, and I can't imagine. I mean, I think it's really hard to be the chef and owner of a restaurant in New York City with all everything that it entails. Your experience, so that you went back to Boulay, and then let's jump into a little how you got into the corporate track, because
sure.
That's been, I guess, over the past 5-10 years, more the route you've gone.
Yes. So I was out in California, and I was at the time working, I was doing research and development, which is kind of my first kind of corporate job. I was doing research and development for Wolfgang Puck in Los Angeles, which was a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome man, great chef, and a gentleman. But I had gotten a call from Dean and DeLuca to go back to New York and take over their prepared foods and catering. It was recently purchased at the time by a Thai businessman. They actually brought Giorgio DeLuca back on to consult. And I thought it was a great opportunity, because I remember when I first moved to New York, Dean and DeLuca was the place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt it lost something. But at the time when they were telling me what they were doing, I thought, this is a great opportunity to bring Dean and DeLuca back to its heyday. And so I worked then there. And then they were just having financial issues. I think retail food has changed so much, and things are so much more accessible than they used to be. You can get anything you want pretty much on the internet now, instead of going there. And in the end, it just didn't work out for Dean and DeLuca. And that's when I got a call from a friend from Wolfgang about working for Connell Company and developing their whole park. And it was a little bit of process for me to buy in, you know, to move to to work in New Jersey, you know, and go this route. And it has been the best thing ever. I mean, I love it, because I get to cook, I get to be creative, and we're doing all these different projects here on the campus.
I love that. I love, you could hear it in your voice that, you know, you're excited about it, and that's wonderful.
Oh, I really enjoy, I love coming to work every day. And we have so many different projects, and we've been able to attract some great talent to come from New York, and there is life in New Jersey, and we're really bringing up and elevating the food and the expectations here in New Jersey.
Yeah, so for people listening who aren't familiar with the park and the Canal Company,
yes,
tell us a little bit about it, because, I mean, you've told me a bit, and I've been on your website and kind of looking around, and there's a lot going on.
We have a lot going on. So it was originally built as a business campus in the 80s. It's 185 acres. We have 6 office buildings. We have a hotel and restaurant. And some of the buildings are net leases, like L'Oreal has a net lease on one of the buildings. So the owners are redeveloping the campus to bring, you know, this to the next generation of a business campus. So it's a lot of live, work, amenities, health, healthy food, exercise, fitness, all these things. So we finished the first building, redeveloping it. It has a new cafe in there, which offers kind of versions of things you see in New York City. So it's not institutional. It has kind of our version of a dig in. We have a bowl bar. We're using, you know, really good coffee from Intelligentsia. And then we have a fitness center where we have a trainer available to all the tenants. We have a nutritionist as well. We've brought in a medical group, Eden Health. So you could, if you wanted to get your checkup there, you can, or your COVID test. So we're bringing all these different amenities for the public, for our tenants to use. And then we're also developing the campus to have parks for the community. We're going to have a dog run. We're going to have a playground. We're going to have more food outlets, a taqueria, a beer garden. We're basically building a city on this campus that you'll have everything that you pretty much need to day to day on the campus.
Wow. And there's yeah. also a hotel, right?
Yes, we have the hotel and we have the restaurant there, Grain and Cane, which we're having an amazing business run right now. We're having busier and busier weekends. Our chef, Louis Bela, came from Andrew Carmelini and Michael Anthony at Gramercy. He's been on since January and has really brought the food up to another level. So we have that already. And we have the first cafe, and we've started construction on the next building, which will house our commissary in order for us to do all the food for the campus and the cafes, as well as catering on and off campus. And then it will eventually support the other food outlets on the campus.
Wow. So how many people are you cooking for?
Pre-COVID, there was about close to 5,000 people on the campus every day. Now, obviously, you don't capture 100%, you know, but we were cooking pre-COVID, you know, breakfast and lunch. We were probably cooking for 500 to 700 people a day in the cafes. And then the restaurant was averaging, you know, around 200 people a day between lunch and dinner. That was during the week. And on the weekends, we could be doing, you know, 350.
Now, if I want to come to the campus, can yeah. I, as a, you know, someone who's not a tenant, or do I need to know someone? I mean, I know you, so I could probably get in.
Sure. Yes. So right now, the first cafe is really for the tenants only.
Okay.
Eventually, our third project that's going to be opening in Building 300, that will be open to the public and to the tenants, and that'll have bakery, pizza, fitness center as well, and that will be open to the public.
And how does one get there? Is this some, you need a car? Is there public transportation?
There is public transportation. The easiest way is a car. We're only 30 minutes to the Holland Tunnel.
Okay.
So we're quite close to the city. We're off of we're right off of Route 78. We're close to Summit, New Jersey. We're in Berkeley Heights. You can also take a train to Berkeley Heights, and then there's a shuttle that brings you from the town of Berkeley Heights to where we are, which is really only a mile and a half away.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna have to visit.
You should. It's pretty amazing what we're doing.
Yeah. No, it sounds amazing. So let me ask you my question from my last guest on episode 288. I had on Adam Fournier. He's the 2021 U.S. Bartender of the Year by USBG Presents World Class, sponsored by Diageo. Mm-hmm. So his question is, with the recent announcement of 11 Madison Park going completely plant-based with its new menu when it reopens, do you see this being a trend on a larger scale in the restaurant industry, especially as you work in a more corporate and egalitarian level of dining than fine dining? What do you think?
I think you are seeing more of a plant-based diet. We definitely have tenants who are vegetarians. I think in our campus, because we have so many different types of people, that there will always be some meat, but we're trying to be responsible in sourcing it. But I think you're going to find people eating less meat than usual. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, you don't need to eat it, that kind of protein every day. You can get other sources. And I think people are definitely more mindful of their health and their choices that they're making for food.
Yeah. It's funny. I just saw yesterday Single Thread, or the team from Single Thread out in Roseburg, California, is taking over the shed, and they're making it a meatless restaurant. And that's I'm very fortunate to have gone to Single Thread before and been to the shed too.
Shed's beautiful.
It is. It's a beautiful space. Both are. I was out at the Worlds of Flavor conference out in Napa a couple of years ago, so I tied that in. But this is another like big name fine dining restaurateurs, chefs who are doing meatless. So I think we're going to start seeing more of that.
I think you are, or you're going to also see just, you know, that the vegetables will be the highlight. And, you know, if it is a piece of chicken or meat, it's going to be in the background. It's a supporting role for the dish, and it'll be less. So,
yeah. So what advice would you give to someone who wants to be a chef, maybe wants to own their own restaurant or go the corporate route? I mean, you've covered a lot of different, as a chef, you've worked in a lot of different types of restaurants and positions.
I have.
Yeah. So what would you say to someone listening who's like, wants to be a chef?
Well, first of all, I think you really need to love cooking and love working because, you know, we are in the hospitality industry. So that means you work when people don't work a lot of the times. So, you know, I've missed a lot of holidays and birthdays, anniversaries, and all those things. So you have to be ready for that. But there's so much satisfaction when you're cooking and making people happy. The corporate route, you definitely get more of a life. I get holidays off now, and I get to spend more time with my family and see them. And it's still extremely creative. You know, restaurants, there's definitely something about restaurants. They're a little more sexy and exciting. But I think you can find that balance in the corporate route as well.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's funny you say that, like what might be corporate versus a regular restaurant or being more I don't know, the sexiness
factor. I mean, I know when I first got my phone call from now my boss, and he said, I want you to come to New Jersey. And I'm like, nah, not going to go to New Jersey. And, you know, I looked up where it was. I'm like, okay, it's not that far. And then I looked up Grain and Cane, the restaurant, and it looked beautiful. I looked at the menu, looked at the photographs. I'm like, okay, maybe I can do this. And then I came out and I met him, and I met one of the owners at the time, Shane Connell, and they showed me what they were doing and where they were going. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. I'd say the closest thing that we're doing right now is kind of like the company in Manhattan.
I know Grace Ann Jordan, who's
correct. I saw that. You posted something
and,
with her. Yep.
And I got a tour of their space about 2 weeks ago. I met up with her. So
yeah.
It was cool to see. They're right in Midtown by Grand Central Station. So
yeah.
But that was
so they're so they're like a vertical campus, and we're in the suburbs, so we're 185 acres spread out. But it's funny because they also have the same medical group in their building, Eden Health, this virtual doctor. Plus, you can go; they have a few brick and mortar offices, and one of them's in there. They're doing coffee; we're doing coffee. You know, they have the bar right by Grand Central. So lot of similarities and, you know, super exciting. So we're bringing New York over here to elevate New Jersey and our campus.
Yeah, well, it's cool and to see more of these types of companies that are happening. And I have to say, you know, I was thinking a tip I need to have coming up would be to be open-minded, because that's kind of what you're saying when you get the call and, you know, maybe a little like, not sure if this is for you, but,
right.
And once you looked into it, being like, wait, this is for me. And I have to say too, my tip today with having a great reputation, I feel I got that. Just, I was thinking about your career, because I feel everything I know, you've worked with so many reputable chefs, and I feel your reputation has like followed you along in like this path. Like, you know, you're very well liked, and I think respected.
Well, thank you. That's nice to hear.
You're very welcome.
You know, I think I'm super passionate about food, and super passionate about hospitality, which is a big part of what we do, and making the guest happy. And there's a lot of ways to accomplish that.
Yeah, true. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back. We'll play my speed round game. We'll talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Just Egg is now the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based consumers in your doors with easy-to-use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat, and it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/hrn. That's ju.st/hrn. Just Egg makes a delicious plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble, great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also a frozen pre-baked folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andres calls Just Egg mind-blowing, and Bon Appetit says, it's so good, I feel guilty eating it. Put the fastest-growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/hrn.
Managing a bar requires understanding more than just drinks. At Diageo Bar Academy, you'll find free training and resources to optimize operations, profitability, teamwork, and more, including bar management to step up your social media marketing and create profitable menus, masterclass events with global industry experts, and finance and budgeting tools to increase profit margins. Stay informed, inspired, and connected to grow your career or business by joining Diageo Bar Academy today. Visit DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Become a member and sign up for the newsletter. It's completely free, and you will be amazed at all they have to offer. That's DiageoBarAcademy.com. D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Brian Bistrong. He is the corporate executive chef at the Connell Companies, The Park, and culinary program director at The Park's hospitality group, Table and Banter. So Brian, it's time for my speed round game. What this is, okay, is I'm going to name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Working the line or expediting?
Working the line.
Thought you might say that. How about Union Square Green Market or the original Farmers Market in L.A.? Because I know you spent some time in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd have to say Union Square just because I have such great relationships there.
Cool. Okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Cool. That's the game.
Nice.
All right. So for industry news, the Wall Street Journal had an article entitled, "Now Trending in Miami Are Manhattan Dining Hotspots. Upscale restaurants from New York City have opened or announced plans to open outposts in South Florida's trendiest neighborhoods." And this was by Arian Campo Flores. So, I mean, I'm heading down to Miami actually in a couple of days for the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, and Miami's my hometown, so it's always interesting for me to see these type of articles and news about what's happening there. And it is true, there's a lot of New York restaurants have recently opened, like Carbone and Coat and Red Rooster Overtown. I think my own take a little bit was, I don't know if this is like the first time we've seen this, but with New York City restaurants going down there. But I don't know, Brian, what's your take on this?
On New York City restaurants in Miami?
Yeah, is it, I don't know, is this just a trend, or is this something you think is gonna, all these places will last or thrive? I don't
know if all of them will last. I think things will change. I think you're also going to see chefs from other parts of the country maybe go there that have left New York or other major cities. You know, and then there's always the element of people developing their restaurants right in Miami. I don't know if that was vague or not, but
yeah, I think that's true. I was just looking to, cause like refresh my memory of who's open there. And a couple of years ago we had, Scarpetta and the Dutch and Lucali and Upland open. Upland has now closed. That's where Carbone took over that space. So I think Miami is a different, people don't think they have seasons, but the seasons is kind of like hot or like hot, really hot. Mm-hmm. And summer is tough.
Yeah.
So, we'll have to see. I don't know if, I'm thinking with all of the restaurants you've worked with and experience, if anyone's opened in Miami, but I don't know if they have.
I think Boulay did for a short period of time, was the one chef. And then, well, Wolfgang is not in Miami, but he's at Disney World.
Yeah.
But for me, I have to say, for me as a New Yorker, because I know these restaurants, maybe it's a little different, I would want to try some like really local places and definitely some Cuban spots, some Latin spots, to see what else there is. That's what I would do going. And then I would definitely hit like Lucali there, because it's so hard to get in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm with you. Maybe it's a different mindset too, as someone who lives in New York, being that I don't necessarily need to try these restaurants in Miami when you have them here, except for the ones that are super hard to get into. But I have to say Carbone, I don't feel I need to go down there in Miami, but I did look to see what their reservations were like, and there's zero availability unless you want to dine at like 11:30 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Wow. Good for them.
Yeah. That's
good for them.
Yeah, seriously. So, well, I guess I'll report back once I get down there, see what the scene's like, and And we'll see how this all goes for everyone and who else continues to go down there. The other big one was that Pastis was going to be opening down there next year. So,
I think that could do very well.
Yeah, I could see that doing well too.
I know Hometown is there too now, right?
Yeah, I did a drive by once when I was down, and then I'll tell you a really funny thing, or I thought it was funny. I was in Miami in February, and I was driving on the highway in my dad's convertible, and I could smell barbecue when I passed by their place. And it wasn't that I realized as I was smelling barbecue that, oh, Hometown is right by here. And I couldn't believe I was on the highway and this was happening.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So, yeah, they have a really big spot and I think that's probably doing well too. I'll have to dine there at some point. So, okay. Just a reminder to everyone that I have All in the Industry swag available on my website, allintheindustry.com/merch. And all of my proceeds from my hat sales are going to be donated to the Independent Restaurant Coalition through May 31st. So go on there and get your hats and support a great cause. Okay, so for my solo dining experience this week, here it is. It's at Minresa at Intersect by Lexus. The location, 412 West 14th Street, Meatpacking District, New York City. The concept, restaurant in residence by 3 Michelin-starred Minresa from Los Gatos, California, a collaboration between Intersect by Lexus in New York City and Union Square Hospitality Group. The menu was inspired by California Coast. The chef owner is David Kinch. Intersect's executive chef is Nicholas Martinez. Why did I go? Well, because Minresa is an extremely special restaurant, and I had the opportunity to go there in New York City, so I figured I had to take it. My experience. So another popular reservation to get, I got a reservation at 9:30 on Friday night, and that's probably the latest I've dined out in a long time. But I went, the dining room was still full, I had a really nice table facing the open kitchen, and I had a lovely experience. Chef Kinch wasn't there, he's no longer in town, he was here for a couple days at the beginning of this launch, so we'll see. I think they're planning to do this menu through September, so perhaps he'll be back. So what did I get? I got Striped Jack sashimi style with sesame, radish, and citrus. I got roasted aged duck with 5 vegetable and fermented carrot jus. And I got chocolate crescent with yuzu, chicory, and cajeta. So my take, it was all really wonderful. The sashimi was super fresh, a nice combination with the sauce it was on. The duck was excellent. It loved all the vegetables it came with. And the dessert was really divine, and it's a must for any chocolate lover. The ambiance, it's a spacious, modern second-floor dining room with an open kitchen. Downstairs, they used to have a coffee shop. I've actually used to work from that coffee shop, but they converted it into a sexy lounge. So, and that was kind of happening on this Friday night. Perfect for, I'm going back to my third date place. I don't know, I said it last week. I feel this is another good one for that. Interesting tidbit. Chef Kinch's other projects include Minresa bread and his first casual concept, the Bywater, which is a New Orleans-themed bar and restaurant. These are all in California. And Chef Kinch also won the James Beard Foundation's Best Chef in Pacific in 2010. So personal fun fact, I met Chef Kinch a few years ago in 2017. When I dined solo at Minresa, and I talked about it on episode 140, if anyone wants to go back and listen. This is his place in Los Gatos, California. And about a month ago, I went to Intersect by Lexus with the restaurant in residence they had prior, and that was The Gray with Mashama Bailey, and that was also excellent. So this concept, I really, you know, it's very cool, the bringing in rotating restaurants and chefs. You get to try a lot of different cuisines from across the country, maybe the world. So the cost of my meal was $92. That's not including tax and gratuity. Would I go back? Yes. Their website is intersect-nyc.com. So there you go. Brian, have you been to this space, the Intersect by Lexus?
I have not. I remember when Dina DeLuca's commissary used to be over there. I remember they were building it back then, and I haven't been over there since. But I would always want to go to Benresa, so I might have to go to Intersect first. It's a little closer, and then it's definitely on my bucket list to eat at Benresa in Los Gatos.
Yeah, it was a special experience, and this is worth checking out. I mean, they do a really nice job. It's run by, you know, USHG, and so they have the hospitality thing down, and they're able to execute these different menus. So, I recommend it.
Yeah, I saw your photos on Instagram, and the food looked great.
Yeah, thanks. It really was. Okay, so time for the final question. My next guest is Anthony Mangieri. He's known as the Pizza Pope, and he's a New York City premier pizza maker with his restaurant Una Pizza Napolitana, which is now open in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. So, Brian, what would you like to ask Anthony?
Well, someone who has been working on pizza dough for a long time now, this past year during COVID, I've had time. I was be interested, how long did it take him to develop his dough, and how does he have to change it with the seasons and the temperature? I'd be really interested to hear that.
That's a good question.
And yeah. does he take stages? Because I would love to go work for him for a day if he'd let me.
Well, I feel I'll put that in my note to him too, and I think he'd take you. I mean,
yeah,
why wouldn't he?
Well, thank you.
So I will find out, and that's the show. I apologize if we're getting some background noise from my work at home situation. I don't know how much that's picked up, but if it has, I apologize in advance to anyone listening. But Brian, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
You're wonderful. I can't wait to get out and see what you're doing out in New Jersey. And I wish you much continued success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. My guest today has been Brian Bistrong. He is the corporate executive chef at the Cornell Companies, The Park, and culinary program director of The Park's hospitality group, Table and Banter. Their website is cornellco.com, and you can follow Brian on social media at @bbistrong. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer, Amanda Wang, and thanks again to Brian. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer. I will be off next week as I'm heading down to Miami for South Beach Wine and Food Festival. I'll be back Wednesday, June 2nd with a new show. I hope you'll tune in then and stay safe and well. And thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.